This is Roberta Grimes with Seek Reality. This is Roberta Grimes with Seek Reality. There have been snowstorms in New York, which is where we have our studio. So we have a couple of weeks now when they were not able to record us when we should have been live. Therefore, we're going to do some replays. What we're going to do today is replay what Kelly Glover and I did early in December, because that turned out to be a seminal conversation. After that call, she and I began to write a book called The Fun of Living Together, which now is available for purchase. We know this is another channeled book. We think it's a very, very important one, and we hope that you will look at it. But meanwhile, please enjoy what to us already is kind of a hysterical, historical moment when she and I looked at one another and said, we have to write about this, and we have. We're very excited. There's already buzz about our book and what might come of it. So please do enjoy this repeat episode. We're sorry it's such a recent repeat. And if you're interested in this topic, which we think is probably the most important one in the United States right now, we're happy to hear from you. We're at robertagrimes.com. So enjoy, and thank you so much for listening.
Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife, and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
I grew up in a small New England town where everybody was white. To show you how clueless I was, when I was, I think, 6 years old, I remarked to my mother that our family doctor looked just like Nat King Cole. I thought it was actually a great observation, but she sputtered, "But he's black." I said, "Except for that." And I was right. Except for his skin shade, they could have been twins. The fact that when I was a child, I didn't find skin color important comforts me now. Perhaps when we stop teaching our children that skin color matters, it will soon become no more remarkable than hair color, and that day cannot come soon enough. I was reared to be so racially unaware that my first encounter with racism happened when I was a junior in college. I brought home my wonderful college beau to share our Thanksgiving turkey dinner. Now, Ed was tall. He was beautiful, gentle, and sweet, and the smartest person I have ever known to this day. It never dawned on me until my father first laid eyes on him that the fact that his parents had come from China could ever matter to anyone. To this day, I'm clueless about one of our most intractable problems. I can't understand why racial differences matter to a single human being. And when it's obvious that in the United States, the government has actually made the problem worse, I don't understand why they won't stop doing that. Our guest this week is again my dear friend Kelly Glover. I grew up ignorant of race, but for Kelly, it's been the water in which she swam. When she learned that I was determined to talk about it now, she very kindly offered to share this conversation. Welcome, Kelly. I'm so glad you're here again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back, Roberta.
Kelly, please tell us a little about where and how you grew up, what your experience has been.
Well, really quickly to summarize where I've lived, I was born in Flint, Michigan, lived there for 3 weeks. My dad was working on his PhD, and after he got his PhD, we moved back to Detroit, and I was there for the first 5 years of my life. Then we lived in Mercer Island, Washington, Seattle, Washington, Omaha, Nebraska, then Miami, Florida, went to college in D.C., went to grad school in Rochester, New York, was going to get married at one point, lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, and then I moved back to the D.C. area, then moved to Austin, Texas. So all of that to say, I've lived in a lot of places in the U.S. I've been overseas a couple of times. But there are two things that really struck me over my 47 years of being on the planet. A very first encounter with racism I had was internalized racism, meaning racism that exists within a culture. So in Detroit, I lived next door, a couple of doors down from a little boy who was very, very fair-skinned. And his mother, I wasn't really aware of color that much because I was just like three, four, 5 years old. And his mother had very pale skin, freckles, red hair, and it turns out that they were what's called color struck. They were not too weren't too accepting of darker skinned black people like my family was. And my mother once saw his mother take him out of the front yard. We used to play together. Sometimes I would go inside and I'd come back, and whenever I come back, he'd be gone. So my mother finally decided to see, why does he always leave when I go inside for something? And so she looked and heard her say, "I told you to stop playing with that black girl." And So my mom later explained to me what that was all about, how some people have a problem, even though they're black, have a problem with darker skinned blacks because they feel that we're less than. So that was the first, my first encounter. And then we moved to Mercer Island, Washington, which is an affluent suburb of Seattle, Washington. And my parents prepared me for that. This was in the mid 70s, and told me that some kids may call me the N word or blackie or whatever. And it did happen. And they said, just explain to them that you're another human being. You're a black person. And it was just a couple of people who were really racist, acting towards me, like calling me the N word, calling me blackie. A few kids kicked dirt on me before, who were actually my friends, but it wasn't until their cousin came to town that they started acting racist towards me. They were fine until their family came. But for the most part, most of the kids were really nice. They were just curious. Now, I would get questions like, are you really white and you just got a tan, or are you really white and you color yourself with a brown crayon? And so my dad, you know, explained everything to me. He was like, you know, you have more melanin in your skin. And so I was like talking like this when I was just a little girl, because they sat me down and explained that human beings come in different colors and you have more melanin in your skin. That's what makes you darker. So I was educating these little white kids in kindergarten in Mercer Island, Washington. So those are my first two really big things, being a dark-skinned African-American and then being one of three black kids in a school that was predominantly white. So it was really interesting. I've had all sorts of experiences being in mixed neighborhoods and non-mixed neighborhoods. It's been quite a ride.
It's been quite a ride, I'm sure. But for a child, well, did you internalize any of that? Maybe I'm not as good when people were saying those things.
Oh yeah. The very first memory I have of internalizing was the silent kind of racism. In Mercer Island, our librarian was European American, and she would let all of the kids sit in her chair as she read a story. And so we'd gotten to the point of the year where everyone had a chance to sit in her chair. And then when it came to be my turn, she asked the class, okay, who hasn't sat in my chair? And I raised my hand and the whole class was looking at me. And then she leans forward and looks straight in my face and says, okay, nobody, we'll start all over again. And I remember looking And everybody was looking at me, and I'm looking at her confused. I'm looking at everybody else, but I'm like, but I'm here. I don't get it. And she would do all sorts of little things like that. I didn't realize what was going on. But for years, it wasn't until I started graduate school that I finally figured out why I was afraid of libraries. In libraries, I never went inside of libraries because I felt dumb. And she did all sorts of things, apparently. I don't even remember all the things that she did, but that was my first memory of her making me feel like I was less than and that I was dumb. And I did not set foot without having to in a library until graduate school, when I took a bibliography course, and that's when I fell in love with libraries and stopped feeling dumb. But I felt inadequate. It was horrible. But I didn't realize it until much later. So yeah, the little silent things that people do to me, they were more powerful than a person calling me the N-word. It's those silent drinks of poison that I think a lot of people of color find more upsetting, especially with little kids when you don't know what it is that you're dealing with.
They're doing this to children. That's so horrible. You imagine doing that to a child?
Yeah.
I just can't. I can't. That's. I have not heard Kelly's stories, by the way. These are all new to me. So if you hear me react, it's genuine. I'm sorry, Kelly, for all the things that have happened. I'm so sorry. So the race riots of the 1960s and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. landed on me from out of nowhere. I had no idea. By then I was a college senior, and Dr. King was at the moment my biggest hero. But how could he not have been everybody's biggest hero? There he was, this diminutive and otherwise unremarkable man right at the forefront of fighting for justice. But he was always patient and loving, the embodiment of peace. The things he said were beautiful. And then the horror of his giving his I Have a Dream speech and then lifting our hearts with so much hope. And then his being shot dead for having dared to dream that dream. That was the first big trauma of my life. I cried, and for a time it really shattered me. I was disillusioned about everything. I vividly recall sharing with a friend as we walked to class what a horror it was that someone who had been working so hard and selflessly for justice and Christian love had been assassinated. My friend had grown up in New Orleans. Her background was rather different from mine. She told me indignantly that Martin Luther King had been murdered. He didn't deserve the word assassinated. And then she walked away. She never spoke to me again. Those have been my only personal experiences with racism in 7 decades of American life. My mother's confusion when I didn't see Nat King Cole's skin color as important. My father's very bad reaction to my Asian boyfriend, and my college friend's lunatic reaction to the tragedy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. Believe it or not, 3 times I've seen it. And I've lived in 2 formerly Confederate states, Florida and Texas, and neither of them has anything racist happened in proximity to me. Texas, where I live now, and Kelly lives as well, is especially, I think, a wonderful example for the future of this country and the world. It's about 1/3 black, 1/3 Hispanic, and 1/3 white, and we live in racially mixed neighborhoods all over the city. In my case, a wonderful Hispanic family lives right next door, and just about 3 doors away is a dark Indian family. My best friend in Austin has the most beautiful dark complexion. I wish you could see Kelly. She is beautiful. So what's the problem?
Thank you.
I don't get it. What is the problem, Kelly? What's the problem?
I think the problem is the age-old problem that human beings do. If it's not skin color, it's religion. If it's not religion or skin color, it's which ethnic group. Human beings, for some reason, have the need to make others feel less than in order to make themselves feel important. It's an ego problem, which turns into, to me, a mental illness problem. To me, racism is a form of mental illness because it's putting energy into something that isn't even real. It's something that is man-made.
Yep.
So it's like looking at a field of flowers and saying, oh, the daisies are the prettiest ones, the other ones are less than. Like when people say, I'm colorblind, I understand the energy behind it, the kindness behind it, but to me that's like saying, if you're colorblind, that means the same thing as you're looking at a field of beautiful flowers and you cannot see the diversity and the beauty in all of those flowers. The problem comes when you make one flower better than another. Diversity is a beautiful thing. It's what people have done with it that makes it such a horrible thing. So I think that's what the problem is. It's a part of this human mental illness, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is a mental, but it's so tragic because it's so stupid. It's so unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. As I think about it, for someone to say they're colorblind means that they notice that color is even there. I guess I don't really even seem to notice it as much. I mean, I think there are a lot of very beautiful black people, to tell you the truth. I think I really like that skin color, but it doesn't make them better. It just makes them beautiful. And there are a lot of beautiful white people too. I mean, mm-hmm. every human being is beautiful. It's time now to get past it. I think I'm going to talk in the next segment about how I think we fix this. But I think first we've got to understand that, as you say so beautifully, that this is a mental illness. This isn't normal. I mean, it shouldn't be normal, but it's not normal for people who are at all spiritually advanced, because you quickly see the beautiful being that each person is. Each beautiful, unique child, old person, everybody is so beautiful. And then, you know, what their shape of nose is, what color their eyes, none of it matters. Certainly their skin color matters even less.
Yeah.
So that's our task. And in order to do it, I think we first have to acknowledge that it's being maintained, I think, in this country more than it should be. I think people mm-hmm. naturally, well, like Kelly and I mean, I thought she was beautiful when I met her, but I didn't think there was anything remarkable about her skin color. And that's how we all have to be. We have to look at what I loved about her was that she sang so well. I just have to put this little pitch in for the way you sing. Kelly has a beautiful singing voice. And we talked last week about how she's helping young children to learn to sing, and the beautiful pride that this builds in them, that they can sing, which is, it's humiliating to me because I can't sing a note, but it's beautiful to hear these children's joy in being able to sing so well. And that's a gift that everybody has to give, something that can help everybody. But golly, so it is absolutely useless to think about what color your skin is. I'm so sorry. I the more I've thought about it, when we started talking about doing this, which is only about a week ago, and I got sort of seriously thinking about, we're going to talk about this on live radio. The more I thought about it, the more I thought, stupid it is that we should even have to talk about it in the year 2016. It is stupid. There's a way to fix it, which I'm going to explain to you, which could have worked 100 years ago, could have worked 150 years, could have worked at any time we had decided to try it. Only it's never been tried, and it's unfortunate because it was first suggested 250 years ago. But meanwhile, let's celebrate the fact that we can fix it. We have a problem. It's a problem that we shouldn't have, but we can fix it. And knowing that we can do that is the first step toward actually getting it done. A few things you may not have known. Did you know that until the 1960s, black families in America were largely intact? That the 1950s even saw a burgeoning black middle class? The 1960 census shows that about as large a percentage of black families were intact as white families were intact. It was the same. But by 1980, 70% of those intact black families had broken up. What happened? Lyndon Johnson's Great Society happened. We may not have meant to pay poor women to evict their men from their children's lives, but for 50 years, that has been the result. And children need both parents. Boys especially need their fathers. If you want to understand the stubbornly high rate of black poverty today and the appalling rate of black male incarceration, you need look no farther than America's absurdly named War on Poverty for an explanation. And when you look at our alarming national debt, which now approaches $20 trillion, just be aware that our national debt in the United States has largely tracked our means-tested social programs. The last time I looked, the numbers were almost identical. It costs a lot of money to destroy so many lives. Now I can hear what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. All this is easy for her to say, but what's the solution? What is the solution? Someone much wiser than I am gave it to us 250 years ago. Thomas Jefferson hated slavery. In his youth, he was determined to end it. He came up with a solution that could have worked even then. He would have had to sell it, but it could have worked. However, it would work so much better today. The core of Thomas Jefferson's plan for ending slavery and ending, therefore, racism was education. Think about this, just a little mind game. If in 1965, instead of beginning the process of destroying black families and institutionalizing race, the federal government had said, "Oh, look, it's time to make it up to all those people who were freed from slavery 100 years ago, and it was only 100 years ago then, what we're going to do is this. Every person born in the United States from 1960 through 1990 who has one ancestor who was held in slavery in this country gets a full boat ride at the very best schools from preschool right through graduate school. That's it. That's all we'd do. So then by 1985, instead of crossing the street when you saw a group of young black men approaching you, what you would have thought instead was, oh, they must be graduate students. Maybe you would have nodded as they passed you. By 1995, seeing a black family looking at the house for sale next door, you would have thought, wow, they must be professional people. This neighborhood is coming up in the world. And by today, we would have been living comfortably racially mixed for a generation. Racism in this country would be almost non-existent. Yeah, doing it right would have cost us some money. But making the problem so much worse and solving nothing has cost us so much more. Of course, at this point, with all the debt the government has racked up and doing what only made things worse, it couldn't afford to do the real fix now. But there are big private foundations and billionaires who could afford to do it. So what do you say, 0.1%ers in the United States? Let's try this. Every child born in America between 2010 and 2040 who has one ancestor who was held in slavery in America gets the best education our philanthropy can buy. What about it? Bill Gates? Peter Thiel? Mark Zuckerberg? Here is how you can make a difference and start to really fix the world. My friend Kelly and her family are upper middle class Americans. Her parents live in a house, even today, that my parents never could have dreamed of owning. And what made the difference for them was the fact that Kelly's father was educated. And then Kelly was educated. Isn't that right, Kelly? Don't you think that's true, that education made all the difference for your family?
Yes, it did. My father really stressed the importance of knowledge is power. And Our home basically looks like an African art museum, and it made me want to be, at one point I wanted to be a music history major, and I did study ethnomusicology some in college, because I saw the notion that multiculturalism is something new is incorrect. If you study Blacks in Antiquity. In fact, there's a book called Blacks in Antiquity by Frank Snowden that shows ancient Italians, ancient Greeks living side by side with ancient Africans and how it affected the art, how it affected music. And I studied this a lot in graduate school. So there was a time in world history where ancient Africans and ancient Europeans lived together, and it was done peacefully. So I think that also education, you have to show that people of African descent have more of a history outside of slavery, because there is a lot of shame in slavery for white people and black people. I think that if you open it up and show how we how we had relations with each other a long time ago, and how it affected art, how it affected the cultures, that this is actually nothing new, except that we just haven't done it very nicely with each other over the past 200 years. But yeah, this is nothing new. Nothing educating from way back when. Educating outside of just slavery, I think it really helped me a lot because it made me feel like, okay, I'm more than just descendants of slaves. We have a very long history just like everybody else on the planet does.
Yeah, and a long and proud history too.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult for, I guess I would just add one more point, which is it doesn't even matter what the relative history of families is. I am Danish on both sides. All my ancestors came from a little tiny dot in Europe, and they were dirt farmers. My grandfather in this country was a dairy farmer. I mean, there could be no more humble ancestry than what I have. I have no connection to the earlier ancestry in the United States before about less than 100 years ago. But I don't consider myself any less, and neither should anybody else consider themselves less, because it doesn't matter where you came from. Don't you think,
Kelly?
It
sure doesn't.
It matters where we're going. Kelly's father is a retired community college president. Years ago, she shared with me a book he had written about his life. It's called Exodus from the Door of No Return by Roy G. Phillips. That's with two L's. You can find it on Amazon. I urge you to do yourself a favor and read this book. It changed my life. And I have met Roy Phillips. He's a beautiful, courageous, and really charming and kind of funny man. He's delightful. When Dr. Phillips was a boy, they were lynching people in the United States. And yet he managed to get a good education, and he managed to build his own great American dream and pass it down to his daughter. I think this is the quintessential American story. Then one day, this very successful American man visited an African port, and he fell to his knees on the dock from which his forebears had disembarked, but not by choice. Reading that passage in his book brought me to tears. But he had triumphed, and now we all can share in his triumph. Kelly and I don't talk much about race, but now we plan to talk about it a lot more. We've committed to co-write The Fun of Living Together with a tentative pub date of mid-2018. I've been so clueless that sometimes I've felt awkward talking with Kelly about race, but now it's time for us all to talk about it. Please make some friends who are melanin enriched like Kelly, or if your shade is darker, then make some pale friends like me and go out to lunch and talk and laugh about a million things. You don't have to talk about race. I mean, maybe it's better not to. Kelly and I almost never even mention it. Talk about your lives. Talk about who you are. Talk about your dreams. Talk about everything and get to really know one another. Do that a lot. How are we ever going to understand one another unless we finally begin to really talk?
Yeah.
Kelly, what do you think? Tell us what you think about all this.
I agree with you 100%. Like I said, when I was a kid, I moved around a lot. We moved to like every 3 years. So I was always the new kid on the block. So I talked to whoever I could talk to. And it's made me just try to establish relationships with human beings. I don't care if you're gay, straight, transgender, black,
right.
Asian, whatever. I look for people who are open to just sharing the human experience with me, sharing this journey with me. And if everybody lived that way, man, wouldn't life be so much better? Instead of pointing the finger and saying, you are the other and I can't talk to
you.
Or from what I see on the media, what I see on the TV screen, oh, I'm afraid of this person because the media keeps showing me images of this. That's another thing. Stop watching so much news, people.
Yes.
It instills a lot of fear in people, and it really is. Basically, it's fear. It's fear of those who are different, and we've got to stop doing that. When you do that, you end up building rich relationships with people, just like Roberta and I have. You get beyond the labels.
I that was such a wonderful point you made. Fear is the opposite of love. Racism is at its core fear. yes. of various kinds. And we have to get past it or we cannot love anybody. I mean, that's the part of it people really don't get. There's no way you can have this prejudice against, whether it's racism, as you point out, or transgenderism or whatever. I have no idea. I don't even understand all that stuff. Whatever you have that makes you different from other people and makes you see yourself as other than they are, that's mm-hmm. fear. And yeah. you got to get past it. I mean, when you're past it, you won't even really notice. It won't be the first thing you notice about someone, what their skin shade is. You'll notice their smile. You'll notice if they say something clever or something that makes you resonate and think, oh, that's someone I want to know better. Those are the things to notice about people. I mean, yeah. I have so many friends of all different shades and descriptions. By the way, I'm still friendly with my college boyfriend all this time. It's just a joy to be friends with people. And there's nothing to be afraid of. They're not going to hurt you. You don't have to cross the street. Even today, if you see young black men coming towards you, they're not going to hurt you. They're just trying to live their lives just the way you are. Or conversely, mm-hmm. if you're a black person in a white neighborhood and you see someone who's coming towards you and maybe he's packing and he's got a Texas hat on, smile at him and he'll smile back. I never smile, but unless
I do.
Racially. Yes. I've never seen a less racially.
Roberta, I got to tell you, I used to be afraid of white men and pickup trucks. And I had to get over that real fast when I moved to Texas. And so, yeah, I'm not anymore. But, yeah, girl, I had to get over that. I was just the opposite. Like, yeah, the hoodie thing, the girl, it was white men and pickup trucks. I was scared. I was.
Oh, my. So you never went out of doors, in other words. Because in Texas, that's the culture. Oh, my. I feel that there's a wonderful openness in Texas, not just interracially, but also interculturally. As I said,
we have an
Indian family, several who live in my neighborhood, and some of them quite dark. But the point is, they're immigrants, first or second generation from India, and they have an Indian culture about them. My mm-hmm. dear friends next door, who are Hispanic, a wonderful family. They do some Hispanic things, and it enriches us all that we have these differences. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. And that's true across religions too. Get to know people who are of different religions and talk about stuff. Don't talk about their religion. Talk about, you know, their dog and what he was, had to take him to the vet or whatever other stupid things come up. That's the stuff of life. That's how we come to know and understand and trust one another when we talk about our private lives. So that's where we're going with this. That's where we have to go, because going the other direction lies chaos, disaster, and tragedy. And we've had enough of that now. Dear friends, this is not just the way that Kelly and I feel, but it's the way that we all have got to feel now. Skin color and cultural differences are less than superficial. It's the deep things that unite us as people that actually matter. And never forget, we are all one being. Our minds are all part of the mind of God. So we are already perfectly one, all of us. And we cannot raise the planet's consciousness and put the final end to every form of evil in this world until we can learn how to live together in the tranquil unity that is who we already are. It's my confident belief that very few people in America are really racist anymore. Otherwise, I would have met a lot more of them. I would have seen a lot more in 70 years of life than three instances of overt racism. And now, especially, it doesn't even seem to be a problem, but it seems to be mainly politicians who are keeping the notion of racism alive, which is why Kelly says, stop watching the news. The rest of us, all of us, have the right to go around the politicians and just ignore them. Don't watch TV, but go around them, come together, learn to live and work and play together. We can do it. It won't even be hard. And as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, my hero to this day, the greatest American of the 20th century, and I don't think anyone comes in second, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, we must learn to live together as brothers, or perish together as fools. Kelly, what else do you think? Do you have any final thoughts to share with us?
I think we've basically covered it, but I would like to basically end with saying, just when you see another human being, just think of them as just another human being. Diversity is the spice of life, and let your childhood curiosities of life transcend into your adulthood to get to know people who look like you and people who don't look like you or act like you. It's just view life as a wondrous journey without fear.
Without fear. I think it's important always to remember that fear is the literal opposite of love. We came here to learn how to love more perfectly. And the only way to do that is to get past whatever about us, about the way we think, about the way we see other people or the world, is fear-based. So we don't even have the option anymore of othering other people, whatever their situation might be, because every time we do that, we're hurting ourselves, and we're hurting ourselves very directly. We're making it impossible then for us to grow spiritually, which is why we're even here. That's the reason we're here. So why don't we like get down to brass tacks and do what's going to make it work for us? Let's be selfish about this, perhaps. But you're right, Kelly, and it's just so important, I think, now. And I don't know why I haven't thought about this before. I really only started talking to Kelly about this and thinking about it a week ago. I feel stupid now that I did that, because this should be, I think, at the forefront of so many conversations today. We know it's a problem that won't go away on its own, in part because the government is maintaining it. But we also know that there's so much richness and abundance and joy in making all these different friends, talking about their past, their history. I mean, I love talking to people who are different, and I'd like to hear about India and what it's like to be someone from India. And by the way, it's surprising when you talk to people about their lives in other countries, it's really doesn't sound very different from our own. I was talking not long ago with my friend, Ed, who is still my friend after all this time, who has had a career selling in China, and he told me all about China. And the more he told me about it, the more I thought, you know, it's just like that they're all people. It's all superficial what the differences are. At the very core of their being, they're just people. I think that's where we have to start. Understanding that we don't need to be afraid, and they're not different from us. They're not a different species. They're not different in their hopes, fears, dreams, aspirations, what they want for their children. It's all the same. And when we start there, I think that we can begin to build a commonality which will allow us to stand up to the government and stand up to anybody else who tries to divide us. We are one being, and it's time for us really to accept and to find joy in the fact that we're one being. I think that I urge you to read Dr. Phillips's book. I think that when I was reading it, I didn't fully appreciate, I'm going to have to read it again, I didn't fully appreciate what he went through, but he had a pretty tough life in the beginning. And all of us have our own struggles. This is a struggle, though, that people should not have. With all the other struggles like poverty and you know, illness and the loss of parents and all the things that can go wrong in people's lives, what we should not have is this ridiculous, unforced error of racism. I mean, that you would grow up, Kelly, and not go into a library because of one rotten, disgusting librarian is tragic. I mean, that, think of all those, and if nothing else, people, please, dear friends, think about all those young black boys who are being raised in third generation and more without fathers in the home. And think about the need they have to be fathered, to be loved, to be treasured, to be made to understand how perfectly beautiful they are. Dear friends, we can't get past race until we can get past whatever made my mother see Nat King Cole's skin color as more important than the fact that he was the spitting image of our doctor. Until our children can bring home the loves of their lives and we can see just their sweetheart's brilliance without caring about their shade of skin. Until then, There is not a single thing that we might do to try to bring the United States and then the world together that is going to amount to a hill of beans. This is where we start to fix the world. Until every one of us goes up to that mountaintop with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and we look over together into his promised land, we will continue to wander in a wilderness of pain that is of our own making. Until every single one of us can fall to our knees on that African dock and say with Dr. Phillips, in the words of Dr. King, that thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Until we all can do that together, then none of us is free. It's up to us to fix the world, and beginning with the United States, and the time for us to do that is now. I'm so glad you've been with us today. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, and you never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it will change everything in your life for the better. Now, next week, the BBM Global Network will be doing some maintenance, so our next live Seek Reality program will air in 2 weeks. Our guest is going to be our wonderful friend and regular contributor, Dr. R. Craig Hogan. He's going to update us on his work with the North American Communication Station and also his mediumship development circle, which is really amazing. He'll tell us more about the wonderful Afterlife Research and Education Institute symposium to be held in Scottsdale in the fall of 2017. And who knows what else he'll say. He always has a lot to say. So please join us. This week, our guest has been my dear friend, Kelly Glover. Her life and the life of her amazing father are yet more proof, if we ever needed more proof, that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream still is possible. And the only way that we can fix the United States now will be for all of us to make Dr. King's dream our own personal dream. What divides us as people is trivial beside all the important things that unite us. And let's be perfectly frank about this. Until America can vanquish racial separations, we never can make America great again. At broadcast time, we have a president-elect in the United States who has made that slogan his wonderful goal. And if greatness means anything, it means freedom and opportunity for every American of every race. So with whatever else we do during the Trump administration to try to mend what is wrong in this country, please, let's make ending racial separations once and for all a main personal goal for each of us. Just intending the goal will be enough to begin the process of coming together as Americans. If not us, who? And if not now, when? My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. And very soon they will all be audiobooks. Some of them are already for sale. So please check them out and let me know what you think. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. Seek Reality is also available as free podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. For information about where you can find Seek Reality, if you want to read my blog or to contact me, please go to robertagrimes.com. I answer every email, promise. My dear friends, I don't tell you often enough how grateful I am for your friendship. I've heard from many of you. I hear every day from people now, and each new email lifts my heart. No kidding. Sometimes they make my entire week. Together, we're doing what we can do to raise the consciousness of this planet and to unite and uplift all the world. You're a crucial part of that process, and I am more grateful for your love and support as we do this work together than I ever can say. If you have suggestions about guests, perhaps, for Seek Reality, if you have suggestions about things I can write about in my blog, if you want to tell me what you disagree about. And I do get emails where people say, I don't agree with this or that, and we have a conversation by email. If you want to contact me about anything, don't hesitate. I do read and answer every email. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in Hour One Reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.